You've heard me use the term normative mainstream standard a couple of times. I want to kind of go back and try to clarify what I'm talking about. In the United States today, the big four that I showed you, many local organizations, all use essentially the same standard. There are variations on fine points. They don't agree on every point completely, but essentially they all are following the same rules. This is a reality. It is a de facto situation. It has occurred over time because that's what the community in America wants, so that we have most products having a symbol that is relatively interchangeable. And that is tremendously important, particularly, for example, in a food service establishment, permits us to use a wide range of products. There are standards that are both more liberal and more strict than these normative mainstream standards. Again, looking at this normative standard, it is a fact that stands out whenever you look at the marketplace. It is not a judgment. What is interesting is that the mainstream standard in the United States is more similar from agency to agency than, for example, would be products in Israel or Europe, where the normative mainstream standard may in fact be slightly different. For example, an example that I've already given you is the GLOT meat. GLOT is essentially an American procedure. That is, the insistence on GLOT meat is something that is predominantly American. The other thing that is important to recognize is that that normative mainstream standard does not stand still. It does evolve as we become better able to get kosher products, as we don't have to always allow certain leniencies. The rabbis historically, in order to make sure there was food for people, were as liberal as they could be within that framework of the normative mainstream standard. However, over time, some of the things that they've allowed, they've decided that, well, we don't have to do it anymore. Also, as new information becomes available, they do make changes. One of the changes that was made, for example, was actually to help with the allergy issue. When one has chocolate, one has both parv and milk chocolate. And the process for switching a factory from parv to dairy or from dairy to parv was something where the rabbis kind of tried to figure out a way to make it happen. They've learned in recent years that if you make dairy chocolate and try to then make parv chocolate, you get small traces of dairy ingredients in the parv chocolate. From a religious point of view, that is from a kosher point of view, the parv product with a little bit of dairy dust is perfectly kosher. However, because it endangers people's lives, that is, people who are highly allergic cannot even tolerate sometimes that level of dairy contamination, the rabbis, using the religious principle, the halacha principle, which is Jewish law, said we cannot allow these companies to switch back and forth between parv and dairy the way we had. And so there's a case where they have now insisted that you either operate parv or dairy on an ongoing basis. So the laws have changed. Most of the mainstream agencies have accepted that, and therefore it has made added difficulty for the food industry. But in fact, in this case, I think most of you would agree that producing a product that is misleading for the public is not a desirable thing, and the rabbis are to be complimented for insisting on this change. Just to give a little more background on these changes, we've already talked about the leniencies, but I also want to talk about technology. Technology changes and offers new opportunities. For example, one of the issues that many of us are concerned with in many different capacities is the question of genetically modified organisms. And it turns out that the first product that was produced by genetically modified organisms was the cheese clotting enzyme, chymosin, or what some people refer to loosely as rennet, was produced using bacteria to make the enzymes that clot the cheese. When that became available, the rabbis were able to determine that they could use this product. And because they were able to use it, it made it easier to deal with certain problems in kosher cheese manufacture. And therefore, the rabbis could be a lot stricter about how they deal with the problem of kosher cheese. And so here again is a case where the technology permits new solutions so that leniencies from the past are no longer required. So what I hope in this section I've done is give you an idea of how to identify products, how to use these markings to tell something about the product, and to give you a sense of this normative mainstream standard that conditions how we do things in the United States. In the next section, I'd like to look at some of the business figures and some of the demographics behind the explosion of kosher and halal foods.